Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And we're going to get to the two latest attempts at hysteria. That's all. That's the only way I can describe modern life, is lurching from one hysteria to the next, seemingly, at least for most of the uninitiated out there. The one-third of people falling through time and space, aimlessly, pointlessly, just entertaining themselves. And then there's the third of us who are paying attention, who are just dismayed by it all. And another third, I think, just willing to go either way, wishing someone would tell them what's going on, and that's why we're here. We're here for you. So let's start. Well, before we get to anything, let's start with the Real Religion file, where activist Mark Hoke was found not guilty last week of his alleged violations of the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act, also known as the FACE Act, also known as the Soviet-era Antichrist Act, basically designed to keep people from interfering with other people who are murdering people. There was an allegation that Mark Hoke, who's a father and was at an abortion clinic with his son, and a crazed, maniacal killer, Bruce Love, began attacking his son. And so Hoke took the creep off his son. And anyway, the allegations that Hoke had assaulted the abortion clinic volunteer, Bruce Love. Anyway, so Hoke's found not guilty, thank God, but neither the jury nor the judge nor anyone else involved was allowed to recognize Hoke as a hero and the alleged victim, Bruce Love, as a member of a murderous death cult, which is what we're here to do right now, is make sure that everyone understands exactly what was actually going on there. Thank you very much. Now, from one hysteria to the next, should I start with last week's hysteria, which was the beating death of Tyree, I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. I wasn't able to address it last week because there were technical difficulties. And let me just explain, here at the McBurney compound, we have five goats and three children, and sometimes things just get a little overwhelming here on the compound. And so that's what happened last week. But last week, all of attention of everyone was being directed toward the beating death of Tyree. I'll get his last name when I get to the story. And then this week, it's the Chinese spy balloon. Let's start with the spy balloon, since it's fresher in everyone's mind. I just watched the video of the alleged shootdown of the alleged Chinese spy balloon. I watched the video several times in slow motion with close-ups and everything as best I could. Obviously, I'm not with the Pentagon, but I watched it as best I could. And so let's go here to the widespread panic file. And the question everyone was asking on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, into Saturday, why doesn't Joe Biden shoot down the balloon? Just shoot it down. And there was an article by Brandon Smith over at America First Report. He talked about the fact that these balloons are actually quite difficult to shoot down. He noted that the most likely reason it wasn't shot down is because it's very difficult to shoot them down. These high-altitude balloons travel at between 80 and 120,000 feet. The average fighter jet can get up to 65,000 feet. And the balloons emit little to no heat signature, making it very difficult to target them using a missile. So, by the way, when I first saw the balloon on TV, the first thing I thought of was the balloon boy. I'm not sure when that story was. 5 years ago? It might have been 10 years ago now. Every time goes by so fast. I thought of the balloon boy. Remember, the whole world's attention was fixed on this balloon, and we were all told there's a boy inside the balloon. And at first, you looked at it, and you're like, oh, this is unbelievably terrible, horrible. There's a little boy in the balloon. And then the longer it went on, after everybody kind of calmed down a little bit, they started saying, well, wait a second, how can there be a boy inside the balloon? And the balloon's still floating, and everybody kind of came to their senses and realized that we were all being played by a family that wanted to make a reality TV show or whatever it was. That's the first thing that crossed my mind. I actually stopped and thought, maybe, is this real? A Chinese spy balloon? Okay. Anyway, so I was wondering, of course, if it was a spy balloon, why didn't we shoot it down? I read this article. Well, maybe it's not that easy to shoot down a balloon. And it turns out balloons are actually a fairly low-tech but sophisticated way to outmaneuver high-tech surveillance and weaponry. So anyway, the story goes on, of course, and then Saturday morning, the balloon is shot down. Allegedly, the balloon is shot down. And I read another article. This was in Zero Hedge. And the author says, to plan sending a balloon like this from China to a place over the U.S. Doesn't sound doable. So balloons, by the way, they get blown around by the wind. And so they're not highly accurate weapons. They're good for, one of the reasons balloons are so good for monitoring the weather is because the weather has a direct impact on the balloon that you can measure. Now, this balloon may have been directional to some degree. But balloons generally are not very accurate, and to think that the Chinese could put it over a military base just seems like a stretch in the mind of this author. And this author points out a likely scenario that I have modified that because, anyway, likely scenario. Number one, balloon deviates off course and gets into U.S. airspace. Number two, people see it, and the Pentagon feels it has to communicate about it. But everyone involved with running the country is busy getting high and clubbing and entertaining themselves. And they're caught unawares in a drug-induced stupor and just don't know what to do. Number three, the media goes all in fear-mongering. Definitely. And then finally, the administration caught completely unawares, waking up groggy like Hunter Biden at a motel with a Russian spy woman. The administration, caught unawares, feels it has no other choice but to cancel the Blinker's upcoming trip. You remember, Anthony the Blinker Blinken, our secretary of something whatever, was going to go to China, and now they've canceled the trip. And it's not because anyone was planning anything nefarious, more than likely. It's just that nobody is actually at the wheel. And when suddenly someone is required to be at the wheel, you've got a bunch of stoned children like, okay, oh yeah, we got this. I was paying attention the whole time, man. Yeah, it's good. It's good. And so they cancel the Blinker's trip, and all of this ends up being, and by the way, these balloons, the government official line from the Department of Defense is that it was shot down with a Sidewinder missile. Okay, all I'm going to ask you is watch the video on YouTube, the close-up, slow motion. There's no missile. And by a Sidewinder missile is a heat-seeking missile. Balloons don't have heat. So, anyways, just so many things don't add up. And I think it's nothing nefarious or necessary conspiratorial or a signal of the end of the world. I think it's a sign of just how vulnerable the whole world is to collapsing into hysterical warfare, bloodshed, and violence. Because there's just no adults at the wheel. The author at Zero Hedge says, the story is absolutely shameful and an absolutely shameful and sad reflection of the insane times we live in. Indeed. And it does reveal that America is utterly exposed. Naked among wolves. That's the position we're in. I said when Joe Biden was installed in that fake stolen election in 2020, I said when that happened, this is very dangerous. Take this very seriously. That you have an incompetent buffoon at the helm is nothing to laugh about. It's nothing to chuckle at and make fun of. Because our enemies are just sitting there lurking in the dark like a pack of wolves. And this latest Balloon Boy episode, it really makes it clear to me. Now, let's go to the Love or Law file. The Love and Law file, where a Republican in Louisiana has introduced a bill to allow pregnant women to recover half their pregnancy costs from the father of the child. So here we have Republicans. Now, here's what he says. Representative Larry, a Republican in Louisiana, says pro-life bills enhance the necessity for a bill like this. Since we're going to allow more babies to live and we're not going to kill as many, somebody has to take care of these babies. So don't worry. The Republicans are there with a law that says the dad has to pay the mom any out-of-pocket expenses that she saves the receipts for. Now, how did this genius Republican come up with this idea? Well, he was contacted by family law attorneys. Family law attorneys who only care about love and families. That's what family law attorneys care about. They don't care about getting paid to manage divorce cases. That's not their primary interest. They're lawyers. They're humanitarians. So they called up Larry, the ever reliable Republican, and they said, gosh, Larry, all these pro-life bills, this is going to cause a problem. Women need a way to recover damages from the men who impregnate them. And so let's pass a bill. And so the lawyers convinced genius Larry to pass the bill. Larry says, the lawyers told me a pregnant woman has no current mechanism to require the father to help. That's just not fair, said the lawyers. Hey, Larry, the current mechanism to get the father to help is called marriage. But Larry's not even aware, and neither are the lawyers. I mean, the lawyers are only aware of marriage as a means to divorce, and they make their living by hence. So under House Bill, whatever it is, in Louisiana, a paternity test would be performed. The father would be required to pay 50% of the out-of-pocket pregnancy-related costs. That would have to be documented, of course. The father should, Representative Larry has a final statement in the article here. This is from liveaction.org, by the way. Friedman says, the father should absolutely be responsible for those expenses. And that's true, Larry. But you and the other Republicans and all the lawyers, you've spent three generations destroying the family. There are no fathers left. And there's no more love. See, so where there's no love, we have to have a law. And where you decriminalize adultery and fornication, what you have is a bunch of children born out of wedlock, and there's no love. And so you think you can pass a law that's going to make everybody take responsibility. And what you're doing, Larry, is you're destroying the world. You're destroying the world, Larry. You should resign in shame, and you should go and sit in the back of a church somewhere and try to figure out what's going on. You should not have access to the levers of authority anywhere, Larry. And any of the rest of these. So, you know, folks, where there's love, you don't need a law. So do you know why we have the law? Is because people don't love each other. If people loved each other, we wouldn't need the law. Why did God have to give us a law? Is because he realized that we don't love him. And so now he has to put rules on us to keep us from hurting ourselves and him. And now we have to do that to each other because marriage, which was the bond of love that holds together a civilization, has been utterly destroyed. Utterly destroyed for more than half of the population. And more every day. And so where that common strand of love that runs through a civilization and holds it together, once that's been unwound, well, you're just going to lurch from one hysteria to the next until civilization collapses into a bloodbath. That's what's going to happen. And everyone's going to be distracted and entertaining themselves and trying to figure out if we can legislate to fix this, or maybe there's an app for that, while it all comes crashing down. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, trying to uphold what's left of civilization. And here, let's get to more of that from the crime as entertainment file. As criminal behavior becomes decriminalized, it becomes legal to then make criminal behavior a form of entertainment, which is happening right now. And here's the story about it. It's Andrew Tate. Are you familiar with Andrew Tate? He said to his extremely attractive audio engineer.
No, don't ask me. I don't know.
He used to make his living beating other men senseless for money. And now he brags. We saw him in an interview and he made your skin crawl. I remember. An allegedly conservative TV host realized that Andrew Tate was being canceled. And so he had him on the air because he assumes that if someone's being canceled, it has to be bad and Andrew Tate must be good. And Andrew Tate reminds him of masculinity. And so he had him on the air. And just so you know, Andrew Tate made my extremely attractive audio engineer's skin crawl. And I didn't like the guy. He's a former UFC fighter. Like I say, he made his living beating other men senseless. And now him and his brother are accused of heading a crime gang that tricked women into defiling themselves in public on video for money, which, by the way, is legal. In 2021, Andrew Tate bragged in a podcast that he had started a webcam business in England with 75 women and he was earning $600,000 a month. Now, I don't want to get into exactly what Mr. Tate has been doing, but it should be fairly obvious to anyone who's an adult because this sort of thing has been going on for thousands of years. And so Andrew Tate is no conservative hero of masculinity. And note to Tucker Carlson, just because he's not a tranny or a faggot or a drag queen does not make him a conservative. Okay? You need to raise your bar a little higher. You remember the guy now, the braggadocious punk with the tattoos and the attitude. Oh. So he's basically pimping women for money. And Andrew Tate is the product of a generation saturated in pornography and every other kind of legalized criminal activity, legalized adultery, fornication, legalized drugs, legalized sodomy. Everything's been made legal in front of this generation's eyes. All the things that were taboo and criminal have been legalized and given to these children, and they cannot handle it. So all of the lawyers and politicians who sold the idea that decriminalizing sexual crimes was somehow going to liberate women, well, they were lying about it. They were lying, and we should have all known they were lying. Some of us said they were lying and even tried to tell you people what was going on. But no, it was liberating. It was all about freedom. Freedom of expression, freedom of choice, and it'll liberate women. Well, instead, it enslaves women. Legalizing sexual crimes like fornication and pornography enslaves women. I mean, does anybody think that women actually want to publicly defile themselves for money? Does anyone really think that? Because women don't want to do that. Men do that. And men have been doing that to women for thousands of years. And now Andrew Tate and his brother have been doing it legally. Right? Andrew Tate and his brother set up a business where they pay women to defile themselves publicly on the internet for money because it's legal. And then, for whatever reason, the powers that be use the crimes committed beneath this veneer of legality that they've instituted that gives them control of everyone. They use that to crush who they will, for whatever reason. Why are they going after Andrew Tate? I don't know. But it's not because of their sexual crimes, Andrew Tate and his brother. It's not for all the crimes they've committed against the women that they've molested and defiled, because that's all legal. But it's for whatever reason, it became convenient to attack Andrew Tate and his brother. And it reminds me of R. Kelly. The culture built R. Kelly, made him what he is by blessing all of the vulgar, disgusting things he said and portrayed about women, and then they arrested him for it. So, Harvey Weinstein is another one. And who's the other guy who allegedly hung himself with the island? I can't. Jeffrey Epstein, another one. So they create a veneer of legality around all this criminal activity, and so everyone participates, and it's actually criminal still. And then the powers that be have control of you because now you've participated in all this criminal behavior, and they draw the dots together. They connect enough dots to legally catch you in something that's technically illegal. And it was all criminal the whole time. And so Andrew Tate is a picture of a child who cannot handle what has been given to him. And this is why you lose a civilization, is because you hand children things they can't handle. And what we can't handle is the wholesale decriminalization of everything that is evil and wicked and destructive and horrible. And you give it to the kids and you tell them it's good, and the kids will destroy themselves and you with it. That's what's happening. Now we go to the cold-blooded murder file, where CNN reports that the San Antonio Zoo is offering a special Valentine's Day greeting. That's right. For $10, the zoo will name a cockroach after your ex and feed it to an animal. This is an annual fundraiser at the San Antonio Zoo. And the zoo says it's to support the zoo's vision of securing a future for wildlife.
Cockroach is wildlife.
So first of all, a zoo is, to me, it's a disgusting thing. I don't like zoos. I don't like putting animals in cages so that people can watch. You want to go watch animals? Get out there and go watch animals. Don't put them in a cage. So I'm not a fan of the zoo, okay? And we don't need zoos to secure a future for wildlife, okay? I think the wildlife can take care of themselves. Anyway. But, by the way, with this the San Antonio Zoo's special Valentine's Day, you can send a digital Valentine's Day card to your ex, informing them that a cockroach named after them has been fed to an animal. So now you can just put it right in the face of your ex. Now, why do people want to do that? Is because people who love each other, when they get divorced, they hate each other more than anything. It's one thing I've observed that's one of the more shocking elements of human nature is how badly two people who you thought were in love can now hate each other. It's astonishing, the depth of the hatred. And so what the zoo here is doing is they are facilitating the potential for cold-blooded murder. You get a Valentine's Day from your ex that she put a cockroach with your name on it and fed it to the animals. You're introducing the idea of violence into a very dangerous and potentially murderous situation. This should be illegal. You should not be allowed to exacerbate hatred for fun. But people chuckle at this. I'm going to send my ex a cockroach, right? Uh-huh. Ex shows up at your house, blows your brains out. How about that? Oh, that could never happen, Doug. Happens all the time. Over a lot less than that. Adultery and fornication, sexual immorality, the leading cause of murder of all time in all cultures throughout all of history. The leading cause of murder. Okay, so now we go, do I want to do the guy from Pfizer? I'm going to get to the guy from Pfizer because, remember the guy who got videotaped by Project Veritas? We're going to get to that. Because I didn't get to talk about that last week. But first, let's go to Ireland for St. Patrick's Day. Ireland for St. Patrick's Day. Ireland's progressive-leaning arts minister, Catherine, declared last week, alongside a number of drag queens, that this year's St. Patrick Day's festival in Ireland, blah, blah, blah. Do I have to say any more? She made the announcement while surrounded by drag queens. So we know what's going to happen to St. Patrick's Day in Ireland. They're going to sodomize it. Uh-huh. The article goes through all the things they're going to do on St. Patrick's Day, which is a traditional religious holiday around the founding myth of Ireland. And it's a good thing. Sure, the Catholics got a hold of it, whatever. But still, it wasn't drag queens. Huh? It wasn't people sodomizing each other in a parade, marching down the middle of the street, which that's what it's going to be this year. Let's see, they're going to have four stages across the festival quarter, championing the idea that clubbing is culture, a vibrant and pivotal cultural expression. Clubbing, you know. I don't want to get into exactly what clubbing is, okay, because we try, what's that? Is it a disease? Well, indirectly, let's just say it involves sodomites going from building to building until the early morning hours. And you can just imagine they're not going from Bible study to children's hospital to... No, it's not like that. That's not what clubbing is. And so now... The clubbing as culture will feature hosts to DJs, drag queens, artists, cabaret talents, and performers from across the LGBTQ plus community. And so the Irish now mistake clubbing for culture. So what was culture for Ireland? Who was it? One of our kids is reading a book, or did they see a video of how the Irish saved the world? How the Christianization of Ireland basically preserved language and literature from before the Dark Ages. It all came through Ireland. It's a really interesting story. I can't remember if it's a book or a video. It's a book. How the Irish Saved the World. So the Irish go from basically preserving civilization from ages past through the darkness into the Enlightenment by making copies of literature and... Pretty amazing what the Irish accomplished. So now they've reverted to their Celtic pagan past. I mean, if you could have imagined a bunch of pagans naked painting each other and dancing around and barking at the moon, that's what the Irish are going to do on St. Patrick's Day. And if this doesn't bring hellfire and damnation from above, I don't know what could. I mean, St. Patrick's Day to be, wow. Anyway, so when the children are handed things they can't handle, this is like, it's like they handed children flamethrowers and told them it was fun to play with them. And so they are. And now the children who were handed the flamethrowers when they were little kids, they're governing the world. They're captains of industry. They're executive vice presidents and CEOs. And they think everything criminal, destructive, abusive, and bad, they think it's good and it's legal and it's fun. Because that's what they were told. And unfortunately, for many, there will be no recovery from this. There will be no recovery from what is about to come down on this generation of children who were miseducated, misguided, and just otherwise abused by their hapless, selfish parents. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you. So those guys obviously were on drugs. Go ahead and let that roll a little bit. Just listen. Okay, this, please. I mean, aside from the drums, that's it. It's the only redeeming quality. All right. So he was the first one to die. accidental overdose of alcohol, from what we understand. All right, so let's go from there into the end of the world file, where we had the executive for Pfizer that was videotaped by Project Veritas. Last week, he came out with the directed evolution and the guided evolution and tweaking it for ourselves, right? That was shocking, right? He said, why don't we, like, mutate it? talking about a potentially deadly virus. Why don't we mutate it ourselves? That was shocking. This week, it comes out that Pfizer management has concerns about the effects of the vaccination on the fertility of women. Probably more shocking, actually, that they know about this and are talking about it. Anyway, my advice, by the way, don't take the vaccine. I don't know if I've made that clear. I would say don't take it. Okay. Now, first of all, back to the Pfizer executive, drunk, obviously drunk and high, by the way, obviously drunk and high, Jordan Tristan Walker is the executive. So no one has pointed out the obvious sickness and danger associated with having a top executive at one of the most powerful pharma companies in the world is an open homosexual. Nobody else has said that that's a problem. Okay, I'm here to tell you that's a problem. Here you've got a sodomite basically being secretly recorded on a Grindr date. And nobody else seems to find that concerning or even noteworthy as far as I can tell. I do. I find that concerning. Because here's the facts. If a man has no sexual restraint, he will have little other moral restraint. And none at all when it comes to making money. None. Here's a man who's been told that the most vile, criminal, disgusting behavior is not only legal, it's good. He participates in it, and then he's given the levers of power at one of the most powerful companies in the world. That is dangerous. It was well established throughout eons of time that homosexuals, at least in Western civilization, always been well established, at least in the West, at least since the Enlightenment, that homosexuality is criminal. It's a mental illness. And it's certainly a trait that kept you from any serious executive position outside of the entertainment industry. And it certainly kept you out of the executive suite. Even in show business, if you couldn't keep your mouth shut about it. I mean, it used to be that way. Homosexual men, as a rule, are immoral, unstable, disloyal, and dangerous. Hang out with some of them sometime. Hear how they talk about each other. Hear how they talk to each other. In fact, just go back and listen to this Pfizer executive and listen how this arrogant little pervert talks about the possibility of leaking a deadly virus on the world. I don't have to attribute anything. You can hear it right from him. And men like this little creep at Pfizer have been given access to the levers of power in so many of the major institutions that civilization is basically now just sitting on a ticking time bomb. You can't have a society dominated by unrepentant, open sex perverts. You can't have a society that flourishes. Societies like that self-destruct. And that's what's happening right in front of our eyes. And to protest it or to even point out that it's happening and call it by name is considered hatred. I'm a hater. Because I said what we all knew was obviously true the whole time. That makes me a hater. And not just a hater, possibly even a criminal myself. And possibly even by the so-called right. Even by the so-called religious, and even by the so-called Christians. And that means there's no off-ramp from the aforementioned self-destruction. Because it's only Jesus Christ and his spirit and the knowledge of him that can stop this tragic collapse that's happening. And it seems like that's been taken off the table. So, unstable, deranged little perverts like this little creep at Pfizer, they will take everything our forefathers built over the cliff with them. Everything earthly that we wanted to give our children will be sold off and squandered by guys like this who don't see anything or think about anything beyond their immediate ungodly appetites and lusts. And in fact, he's being enabled by our failure to call him on it. The fact that nobody will say, well, wait a minute, how does a perverted faggot get this kind of control in a company? The fact that we won't call it out basically enables him and at least to the degree that he was born into this, it's a form of psychological abuse to have allowed this man to have grown up the way he did and to think that he can do what he's doing and it's okay. All right. So, second, here's a college-educated business executive who we can all assume that he's not only worldly wise, but he's also very smart, right? He's an executive vice president at Pfizer. Got to be a smart guy. And here he is saying Pfizer might mutate the virus ourselves, quote. He says, quote, mutate the virus ourselves, right? And then he uses the term directed evolution. He does. So this very smart guy doesn't even realize the non sequitur that he just uttered. Once you do something deliberate, it's no longer a mutation, genius, nor is it evolution, you moron. Doing that is doing something by design. See, you would be adapting the virus by design. You'd put pressure upon the existing structure and information present in the virus in order to alter it. That's design, you idiot. And so, Mr. Pfizer executive, if you had any common sense, you'd realize that what you've been calling mutations are actually adaptations, and that what you've been calling evolution is actually the expression of traits based upon existing information, which means the virus was designed. It didn't evolve. It should be obvious to you, but we'll give you a pass because you were psychologically abused from the day you were born by your leftist, godless parents and the culture that allowed you to be produced. So that you can't even see the truth right in front of your face. And you utter gibberish and non sequiturs, not even knowing how foolish you are. All right. Now, one more thing on this Pfizer exec. If you're an unrestrained, successful, worldly successful pervert, and you're unrestrained from the satisfaction of your every godly lust. In fact, not only are you unrestrained from it, you're praised and you're rewarded for it. And you believe that both you and the virus evolved just the same way, and neither you nor the virus will be held responsible for anything. What would cause you to hesitate in risking the lives and health of the people around you so that you could get more and have more and keep more? What would restrain you? Nothing. Nothing will restrain this generation from destroying the people around them and themselves. Anyway, and one more thing. I don't even know if I want to. Well, here's the thing. There were obviously at least two separate episodes that were recorded. Dates, I guess. Is that what they call them on Grindr? They still call them dates? So it was obvious in the very first video that there were the first video release from Project Veritas that there were two separate dates. And so my question is, did the Veritas guy have to actually defile himself with this faggot in order to get the second interview? That's all I want to know. I mean, actually, maybe I don't want to know. I just have to ask. And I have to ask the Project Veritas guy. I mean, I think we know how a first date between faggots on Grindr ends. It's not just a peck on the cheek and hoping you get the phone number. That's no. And so there were obviously two dates. And so to what lengths does a reporter at Project Veritas have to go to get the story? Because the kids at Project Veritas, they don't know either. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. We're rounding third. Headed for home. Then we go into the widespread panic file where the headline screams from nature.com, when will COVID stop being a global emergency? Still sitting there with never, right? The World Health Organization, according to nature.com, the World Health Organization says that the COVID-19 outbreak will probably stop being a global emergency soon. But we're not there just yet. It's still considered what the WHO calls a public health emergency of international concern. And of course, because bureaucracies love acronyms, they have an acronym for a public health emergency of international concern. PHEIC, pronounced fake. See, so, yeah, it's called a fake. And COVID-19 was declared a fake by the WHO in January of 2020. It was declared a fake. A fake, yeah. You can't make this up. Let's see. Who's this now? Is this not the W? This is the WHO. They tell us that nations must remain vigilant, right? Lay the groundwork for administrative changes to keep pressure on the virus. Pressure on an aerosol respiratory virus. Very interesting. Some researchers think it isn't time to lift the fake. No, I just read that.
Really?
Yeah, nature.com. It says some researchers think it isn't yet time to lift the fake. Permission to look away. Yeah, they don't want to give agencies and public health officials permission to look away and move on to other things. That's epidemiologist and hysteric over at the University of Edinburgh in England, who closes the article with the terrifying thought that about a quarter of the world is still unvaccinated. And that's potentially a lot of vulnerable people if the vaccine worked. And if the virus was a lot worse, it could potentially be, potentially, but it's still an emergency. Don't get us wrong. So we've redefined emergency. So I don't think we can ever have another day that's not an emergency. So anyway, and so this is it, lurching from one hysterical event to another until inevitably civilization loses its balance and like a calliope crashes to the ground. And so for that, we go to the widespread panic file. This should be the you can't make this up file. Someone over at Summit News found an article from 2003. Uh-huh. The title of the article, Face Mask, It's Safe for Only 20 Minutes, published by the Sydney Morning Herald in 2003, explaining retailers who cash in on community fears about SARS by exaggerating the health benefits of surgical masks could face fines of up to $100,000. That's right. It has quotes throughout the article, how health experts saying that face masks are useless at stopping the spread of viruses and could even make the situation worse, which is what we all knew before. And now here's evidence of it from 2003 in the newspaper. Okay. So don't tell me we didn't all know. We did all know. And those of us who want to act like we didn't all know are simply not willing to just step back and say, you know what? I was wrong. I made a mistake. I freaked out and I got scared. And yeah, that was... I've had to do that many times in my life to have to say, you know what? I messed up. I was wrong. I made a mistake. I was wrong about that. So there's an awful lot of people who just need to get over it and just do it. Okay, now meanwhile, speaking of civilization crashing to the ground, over in Jackson, Mississippi, they are asking for help from other states to get water. Uh-huh, water to drink. Yeah. By the way, this is Jackson, Mississippi. This is United States of America. Circa 2023, they're worried about water to drink. Yes, the infrastructure of the water system in Jackson, Mississippi is in such disrepair. Crews are working to replace the entire system. And they've told families and businesses to be prepared to go without water periodically for up to 10 years.
Wow.
Why? Because the whole thing is falling apart. Because while the government was busy spending trillions of dollars on destroying the family and corrupting the minds of innocent children for about 100 years, they neglected fixing the infrastructure, the water pipes. Why? Because they were using the money for all that other very important stuff. Now, some of us have been shouting from the rooftops about all this, that the government shouldn't be spending money on that. They should be spending money on the roads and the pipes, right? The wires, the infrastructure. But nobody listened, and we were called haters and racists. And maybe the actual collapse of the actual infrastructure that sustains people's appetites, maybe that will get their attention. Because I guarantee you, when you start going without water, in only a little while, all you think about is water only. You don't have time to invent ideas about pronouns and adding letters to the LGBTQ chain, because you're just going to think about water. And if that's what it takes to get your people's attention, God has built a system to where eventually that will happen. And they're getting just a little taste of it in Jackson. Just a little preview. Florida Supreme Court. Down in Florida, the Supreme Court has ruled that a state law banning abortion at 15 weeks will remain in force until a final verdict in the case is determined. House Bill 5 was signed. It allegedly forbids the killing of 15-week-old babies, except to save the life of the mother, except in case of a fatal fetal abnormality, but not in the case of rape or incest. Because surely you don't need an exception for rape or incest when you've got the life of the mother one and the fetal. I mean, we already got two exceptions. Why? All right. We got the life of the mother. That one pretty much covers everything, right? And plus, they don't outlaw this law that supposedly protects innocent children. All the pro-lifers are, yay, yay, go, Ron DeSantis, you're great. It doesn't outlaw the pill, the poison pill. So this is all just semantics and fundraising. It's all just politics, folks, politics. Hey, keep moving right along. It's politics. DeSantis celebrated the ruling by citing the Declaration of Independence guarantee of life. Mm-hmm. An apparent, here's how you know it's politics. He only did that to allude to Vice President Kamala Harris omitting life from her own invocation of the Declaration of Independence earlier in the day, or wherever it was in the politics, over in the other ring, on the other stage at the circus, where Kamala was there. So it's politics to Ron DeSantis, to Kamala Harris. It's just politics. It's part of the churn, you know. While moms and dads murder their children, the politicians posture over the ever-growing pile of dead bodies, and both of them stink of death, but the Republicans actually more than the Democrats, because they want to act like they're not. And that makes them even more despicable. In fact, a liberal at Flagler Live pointed this out, an opinion piece. If you honestly, sincerely believe that a human life begins at the moment the sperm introduced to the egg, certain conclusions flow logically from that starting point, including that abortion is murder and that banning abortion is a moral obligation on par with banning slavery. That's the opinion of the author. And he says, I strongly disagree with that approach, but I understand it. And I respect the passion of those who take that position out of deep faith. So already he's patronizing us. I know it's your deep faith because you're such good people. Now, personally, says this author, this opiner, personally, I'm just not smart enough to say I know when human life begins. And I'm not arrogant enough to insist that whatever conclusion I reach on that topic must be made binding on everybody else. That degree of certainty eludes me, says Jay, the author. I'll link to it. You can even comment on it if you'd like. And so Jay goes on. While I can't pinpoint when life starts, I do know that life is complicated and difficult, and we're reduced to making the least worst decision, says Jay. So Jay points out the hypocrisy of anyone who says human life begins at conception, but then allows abortion in some cases. And so for that, we appreciate Jay. But Jay, the reason so many of the so-called... He asks, why? Why do you do this? Well, Jay, the reason is that so many of these pro-lifers, and especially Republicans, the reason they fail to be true to the principle of I will not murder, which, by the way, is really simple to live by. The reason they can't live by it, Jay, is the same reason you claim not to understand when human life begins. And it's because they, like you, want to reserve for themselves the ability to murder someone else inconvenient to them and to get away with it and to even have it called good. And you all may dress it up in uncertainty or exceptions or compromise or who am I to judge or how was I supposed to know? But the reality is that men are deceitful and wicked, and given enough time and opportunity, we will want to and eventually even try to murder one another. And it's only by the standard of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that the world has any other guidance on the matter. To live by the standard of you shall not murder requires that in situations of uncertainty, one must defer to the choice most likely to ensure no murder is done, which would be to always choose against killing the baby from the very first moment. And if you love your neighbor, you would teach him to judge the same way. It's actually quite neat and simple, Mr. J. It's just that you and most Republicans and most pro-lifers are wicked. That's why. It's not that hard to understand. So, all right. So from there, we go to the Love Wins Out file. Uh-huh. I said it. Love wins out. All right. Well, wait. Walk with me on this. An Idaho woman has described the shocking moment her baby emerged from her womb, triumphantly clutching her inner uterine device in his hand. That's right. The little baby Rudy was born. And there's a video online that's been viewed over 20 million times of the newborn holding the IUD in his hand, holding it up like a trophy. Anyway, I don't know if you all are familiar with exactly how an IUD works, but an IUD is designed to prevent timely ovulation. But then if that doesn't quite work, it's also designed to prevent successful implantation of a live human person. And so an IUD is a device designed to prevent fertilization or to kill the baby if it happens. And so they're evil and wicked and horrible. And so young women in America, since they came of age, have been told that it's good. IUD is good. And I'm telling you, the children can't handle this. They can't handle it. And so speaking of children and the fact that there's no one at the wheel, and the fact that the president and everyone in the upper echelons of the Pentagon and the FBI and the CIA and the medical establishment and the universities, they're all in a drug-induced stupor, constantly satisfying their godless lusts, entertaining one another and defiling each other. Nobody's fully awake. And what's about to happen in Ukraine, well, it's just about to happen, okay? That's all. I've got an article from Michael Snyder at the Discern Report. The Russians have been gathering hundreds of thousands of fresh troops for a massive winter offensive that I, by the way, not Mr. Snyder here, I assert the insertion of tanks into the equation has now escalated and move the timeline forward for the Russian offensive. The Russians are going to attack en masse before the tanks are in place because they're not asleep. And Mr. Snyder points out, if the Russians decide to bring the hammer down, the Ukrainians will be in very serious trouble. Unless, and this is me again, unless NATO boots hit the ground, which is next. So unless the powers that be are ready to let Putin take Kiev publicly on TV, which he's going to do, unless they're willing to let him do that, NATO boots are going to have to be on the ground, and I don't think they're willing to let Putin win. I think they're willing to go to World War III over it. Whatever they're hiding in Ukraine, it must be really bad. It must be really bad. Anyway, Snyder closes. This is completely contrary. The fact that Russia is about to send a massive force in is completely contrary to the propaganda we've been fed. We've been told over and over again the Ukrainians are winning. But, says Michael Snyder, that's just a bunch of nonsense. And it has been, and it's been fairly obvious from the beginning, that you've got a couple of criminal regimes at war with each other for the past 7 years. It escalates, and for whatever reason, I don't know, all the Western powers decide that we need to destroy all of Ukraine and churn it up. I don't know. It's just bizarre. Okay, from the Real Religion file, Jacob Kersey is a 19-year-old who began working last May at the Port Wentworth, Georgia police. And now on January 2nd, he posted a message on Facebook that said, God designed marriage. There is no such thing as homosexual marriage. Okay? This is a 19-year-old kid. They're not all asleep, right? Thank God. But, and how does this kid think any other way? How come he's not out there advocating for LGBT drag queen story hour? Is because he's a Christian. He knows God. That's why. How does he know God designed marriage? Because he knows God. All right. The next day after he posts this on Facebook, his supervisor told him, take it down. He said, no, I'm not taking it down. So his supervisor warned him, you could lose your job. Later that day, the police department's major ordered him to come into the office. In fact, come into my office tomorrow morning, right? And turn in everything that belongs to you to the city. So this 19-year-old cop assumes he's getting fired. So they put him on administrative leave for a week, and then he was informed that he's not going to be fired, but that he could not share any opinions on social media that could be considered offensive. They told him that he could post scripture verses, but he couldn't post his interpretation or opinion about the scripture verses. So why are the deviants okay with him posting scripture? Because they don't understand it, and they know nobody else understands. It's just gobbledygook to them. But don't be telling us what it says. Don't be giving us your opinion about it. So the 19-year-old decided to resign, and he quit. He lost his job. Oh, no. Terrible. Did he get the memo of how we're all supposed to do silly, stupid, cowardly, and even immoral things? Because we got to keep our job. He didn't get the memo. This kid didn't get the memo. He lost his job. His life's probably over. He won't be a bureaucrat. do I want to do any more of this? Oh, my goodness. Wow.
He wants the kids to be married to this guy.
Yeah, in fact, that's it. I want to get this kid's, I need this kid's number and address. I need to get in touch with this kid. You got to look him up. I'm looking for someone for my daughter. It's hard. Slim pickings out there, I'm telling you. Slim pickings. Let's see. Do we want to do Catherine Clark's non-binary child? House Minority Whip Catherine Clark's child. Now, this really makes me upset. Okay, so here you got a Democrat politician. Her child's a deviant, perverted, mentally deranged, abused pervert. Right? They call it non-binary. Okay, this is Catherine Clark's son, who was arrested at a riot in Boston with Antifa. Well, when I first read the story, it said Catherine Clark's son arrested. But now the original headline that read son, or the original byline or whatever, not the byline, the original paragraph that read son now says child. And this is the Daily Caller, by the way. This isn't CNN or MSNBC. So, and I don't know if the Daily Caller changed it later. I can't remember exactly where I saw it. But anyway, somewhere along the line, son became child. And regardless of when and where it changed, it appears as child in the Daily Caller's story. So this Clark's child was arrested, charged with assault by means of a dangerous weapon, destruction or injury of personal property, and damage of property by graffiti slash tagging. How about just rioting, huh? If you're found guilty, you're put to death for rioting. We don't need all those extra syllables. Okay, we could just say rioting, penalty, death. But anyway, a statement from House Minority Whip Catherine Clark. My daughter was arrested in Boston, Massachusetts. Well, shouldn't it say my daughter were arrested? How come she says was arrested? How do we know it's not were arrested? I mean, it was her son. It wasn't her daughter, so... Was there more than one person arrested? I mean, if you can change the pronoun, can't you change the was to were too?
Don't fall into this. don't
entertain. Anyway, yeah, don't fall into shame on the Daily Caller for humoring the trans insanity by calling Catherine Clark's son her child and allowing her to call him her daughter in your article. Shame on the Daily Caller. I'm officially declaring my suspicion that the Daily Caller has become home to a number of leftists. Leftists have infiltrated the Daily Caller. I'm concerned about it. I'm raising the alarm now. I'm going to assume that Matt Walsh is accepted from that. I haven't heard anything untoward from Mr. Walsh. Although, I've always had my issues with Mr. Shapiro just because... just because he's godless. And whether you call yourself a conservative or a free market person, godlessness is dangerous. And a commentator, just like the free market, unrestrained by the fear of God, is dangerous. And so, anyway, that's... But let's finish here with... What do we have? Should I go to the legislature? No, I don't think the legislature. No. Well, let's go to the government schools, where we have an update on a story which is rare. But this is reason number 2014 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. This is from the Virginia school where the 6-year-old boy allegedly shot the teacher, says the article. This is from CNN. The headline says he allegedly shot the teacher. Well, the other 20 kids in the room, they all say he shot the teacher. He says he shot the teacher. The teacher says he shot her. But CNN says it's all alleged. Anyway, the school there in Virginia, one of the good schools, by the way, has resumed classes, and they have new protocols that they've announced there in order to resume classes. Support services provided since the shooting will continue on site as students return. Uh-huh. Yeah, now, you could also read that as support services provided. Since the shooting will continue on site as students return. I'm just saying you could read it that way, but anyway, they're going to have services, support and all that. Furthermore, they're adding two security officers along with state-of-the-art metal detectors. Not the cheap, old-fashioned metal detectors, the state-of-the-art ones. Because it's a good school there in Virginia. This isn't one of the lousy schools. It's one of the good schools. Doors have been installed in classroom areas without doors. In classroom areas. This is an announcement from the bureaucracy, and you can tell that a bureaucrat wrote it because they use a lot of extra words. You could have just said doors are being installed on classrooms, but they said classroom area. Why did you say classroom area? An area doesn't need a door. Only a room needs a door, but you're a bureaucrat. So doors have been installed in classroom areas. Other doors have been repaired or replaced. The district would not comment regarding what occurred in the office following the shooting incident. No need for the word incident there. You could have just stopped at shooting, but it's a bureaucracy. So it's a shooting incident. Parents should expect a police presence on campus ready to assist with the transition. They're going to assist. Police will be there, armed men at the school to help your children and assist with the transition. The transition from what? The transition from a school where teachers weren't shot to now coming to school at a school where teachers are shot, but not all the time. Only from time to time. Is that the transit? I don't know what the transit. Oh, it's a transition from a below average daycare center to the equivalent of a prison camp with the doors and the state-of-the-art metal detectors, and the armed guards, and that's reason number 2014 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. And that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.